Folks, welcome back to Beer and Business. It's a special day. Mr. Winnie's back in studio.
It's great to be back.
It's good to have you back after that long hiatus.
Yes.
Today on the show, guys, we had a really special interview with Tiffany Wicks. She is a very successful entrepreneur, mom, homeschool, six kids. She's got an amazing story, but man, did she overcome crazy adversity to get where she is.
Yes, she's an inspiration. Mm-hmm.
Really absolutely. Really we went cool through story. Her story. Oh my gosh. And we only scratched the surface. That's a crazy thing. Yep. But man, I hope you guys really enjoy this. We went deep, guys. It's Tiffany Wicks.
Welcome to Beer and Business. You found the best podcast for entrepreneurs. We serve crafty business knowledge, comedy, and yes, beer. And now it's time for our hosts. If he were to pat you on the back, you'd list it on your resume. It's Jake Mullins. And his beer never gets warm. It just sits there, staying frosty, waiting for him. Mr. John Winnie. And if you spell his name in Scrabble, you automatically win. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Darren Flanagan.
Tiffany Wicks, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I'm excited because you've been a fan of the show. And I love it when we get a fan that finally gets to graduate and be on the show.
Ah, I'm sure the honor is going to be all yours.
Yes, it will. Thank you very much.
Boom. Right. She's listening.
I know. All right. Yeah.
Thank God they're picking on somebody else instead of me to start out coming out of the gate.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling that's going to change. Anyways, before we get down to it, Tiffany's got an amazing story that I want to talk about. But before we get into business, we always talk about the beer. I'm so excited. For 2 weeks in a row now, we are drinking 6 Foot Rule. Mm-hmm. This is the only good thing to come out of COVID. Tiffany, I'm telling you, this IPA was a mistake. They had some beer that was sitting in the tank. They didn't know what to do with it. They threw some extra hops in, and all of a sudden, this beer came out.
Amazing.
It was magic. Yeah,
awesome.
It was meant to be. So they perfected the recipe a little bit, came out, put it in cans. And I think that when this podcast airs, it will be available in the brewery and in stores.
Correct.
Yes.
You should go buy this. I think this is one of the best beers that Lion Creek has ever put out. It's absolutely delicious. It's a hazy New England style IPA, little tropical. And then Tiffany, you're drinking another beer I really like, Conserve Georgia. Mm-hmm. It's a pecan amber ale. What do you think of that one?
It's great. It's not a Coors Light and it's not a Bud Light. I don't do those kind of beers.
No, it actually has flavor. It's delicious. Well, cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Ta-da.
So, cheers. Tiffany, first of all, before we get too far into the discussion, thank you for your service. You served in the Air Force. Your husband also served. So you guys are a military family. So appreciate what you've done for this country.
Pleasure.
And you actually also recommended the guy that was on the show last week, Steve Ankerstar. Mm-hmm. So he was a really good interview. So if you haven't listened to that one yet, folks, got to go back and listen to that one, too. Really fascinating guy. But we're here to talk about you. And I've known you now for, I guess, probably a year.
What?
I think I met you a year ago.
I don't know.
Gosh, it feels like it has to be longer than that. But
it was at Mike and Karen's house at a wine event, and I think that was about a year ago.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Actually, yeah, that was the last anniversary when I met you.
That's right. There. So it was just over a year ago.
Yes.
Ah, okay. See,
mm-hmm.
the old thing's still working. That gray matter still still pumping some info out, but. I've gotten to know you a little bit. And one of the things that I've come to find out about you is that you have overcome a lot of adversity in your life, but I've told you purposely, I don't want to know. I want to hear this story for the first time on a podcast, mm-hmm. but you've given me enough to go, holy crap, this woman's been through some stuff.
Sure enough.
I want to hear your story.
And she's a native Alaskan, aren't you?
I am.
Everything's tougher in Alaska.
Right.
So they say.
Yeah. She's probably tougher than the three of us. Combined, boys, but so tell us about your story.
All right. Well, it begins in Fairbanks, Anchorage, Alaska, or Fairbanks, Alaska. I was born in Fairbanks, raised in Anchorage. My father was an army troop, so he was serving up there. He worked on helicopters. That's where my twin sister and I were born. So I happen to be a pretty headstrong woman, and that may have began at birth. I came out normally.
Yeah, and not surprised.
My twin sister said, no, thank you. And she tucked tail and tried to turn the opposite direction of the outward light. So I came out ready for the world, and she was not so much. So our personalities have been fitting of that since the beginning. So my father moved around just a little bit with us before he separated from the Army, and he got a severance package. So with that, he didn't have a whole lot of education. What are you going to do outside the, you know, Army as a helicopter repairman? So he started driving truck. So that's where we ended back, was in Anchorage instead of Fairbanks. Fairbanks is a pretty extreme place to be. Mm-hmm. So we ended up in Anchorage. I grew up.
By the way, Anchorage seems pretty extreme to most of us.
That's a big city.
It's kind of the pansy part of Alaska is Anchorage. Yeah,
but tough enough for me.
Yeah, there's a, gosh, it's so beautiful there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. I think it's probably the most beautiful place I've ever witnessed or seen or been part of. So
definitely on my bucket list.
You know, everything in my life was, you know, fairly standard, I suppose. I went to a normal elementary school on the, you know, not so upper side of town, because my mom, she was married my dad when she was 14, and she met him when she was 12. He is 10 years her senior. I know, do the math. You guys think my dad's a pedophile. However, she apparently was very mature for her age at,
well, I'd hope so,
at 14. However, 24-year-old man comes up to my daughter at 14, he's going to get his trachea balanced. So at any rate, they were married when she was 16, and she was already pregnant with my older sister at that point. So she was a very young mother. She never graduated from high school. So all she could ever really do was entry level positions. So I grew up latchkey kid. I had a twin sister. I have an older sister. So from, gosh, second grade on, my older sister had the key to the house, and we would all three walk to school in the morning. We would have to pack our own lunches. We'd come home, let ourselves in. We would have a list of chores to do, and we'd have to fix supper before we could go out and play. So as soon as my mom did get home around 5:30, my dad was all over the place because he was a trucker. We'd go outside and play for a couple hours and then be back inside. So the real problems, if you will, started around, you know, preteen time period, I'd say junior high. And that all began because I became a victor for the people who were handicapped, obese. My twin sister happened to be an obese young girl, so people would make fun of her. And instead of dealing with things diplomatically, I would just fight. So I got into a lot of fights. I won a number, and I lost quite a few. Mm-hmm. I was kicked out of school often. I was sexually harassed by boys in school. I remember one point vividly putting stuff in my locker, and this boy came up behind me and put his hands on my breasts. And instead of me saying, please don't do that, which is what I think the school system prefers you to do, well, I laid him out in the middle of the hallway, and then I got kicked out of school. So I spent a lot of time at the thrift store doing my community service so that I could make up my schoolwork. Mm-hmm. Well, that, you know, having my mom gone a lot, working however much she could, having my dad gone all the time, and those two had their own sets of issues. My mom was addicted to gambling, so she had brought up an intense amount of household debt. Well, my dad, not to be outdone by her, he also really loved classic cars, and he liked to build race cars, which I have no problem with, so long as you have the cash flow to support that sort of hobby. They did not. So they both ended up racking up hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. And that created a lot of hostility towards the two of them, because they were equally blaming one another for the debt they had accrued. So I'm being raised by two people that I just prayed every day would please just get divorced so we could end this. The fighting that they had at one point, you know, my dad was ducking teacups as they came flying across the room, hurling at his head. And there was no drug use or no, you know, excessive alcohol use or anything. They were just irresponsible kids from the beginning trying to raise kids. So they're, you know, my mom was 17, 18, and she had three kids, three and under. And so my dad pretty much raised her, and they're still together today. I don't know how, but they are. I think it's out of necessity. I think it's out of necessity, truly. Neither one of them know what to do without each other. And there's some love there for sure. It's just not how I recognize it. And as a kid, if there was love there as well, it wasn't in a way that I certainly recognized it.
Sure.
Because I started seeking the attention of anyone. anyone that would pay attention to me. So that came in the form of fighting first, because turns out that got me some attention. It was all negative, of course, but that got it. And then the boys came into the picture, and I wanted to be around the people who thought highly of me, who complimented me. And I was not getting good grades. At that point, I had started experimenting with alcohol and drugs. So at one point, I darn near killed another person. I was taking mushrooms, and he jokingly put his hands on my neck, like, you know how you might say, I'm just going to strangle you. But when you're high, that seemed like a legit threat.
Yeah. Thought he was like Godzilla.
So there we were out in the middle of the campground with a bunch of other high people. And I've got this guy over a table strangling him. And I'm laughing all the while. And I have no idea that I'm minutes away from killing this guy. So I get pulled off. And, you know, that was, you know, the big run-in with the drugs. And I thought, well, probably ought to take a break from that and maybe just stick with something that's a little less life-altering. We'll just stick with marijuana. Okay, great. Well, marijuana, not all of it's the same. And there come one night where I was at a party, and there were lots of nights that I were at parties when I shouldn't have been, you know, 13, 14 years old. And
yeah, but your mom was married at, you know, met her boyfriend at 12. So,
right. So, I mean, yeah, it all.
You're twice as mature as she was.
Well, and at that point, my parents just wanted us out of their face. They were like, we're okay. You're pretty much grown now. Just go. Just be gone, because we've got a lot of our own crap to deal with. So there I was, and I had smoked, and there was something else mixed into that. And there came that moment where there's a boy, and there's a very high passed out girl who can't say no. There was never a yes. There was just, I can't say no. Mm-hmm. And you can guess what happened from there. So from that moment, I drank a lot that evening, and I called my dad, and I said, I've made a huge mistake. I'm someplace I shouldn't be, and I've drank a lot. I need help. And it's the first time I think I'd ever actually asked him for help. And I was desperate. And instead of having somebody say, I'm, where are you at? I'm just coming to get you. He said, you better get your ass home and don't kill anyone on the way. And I was like, okay, I have no idea how I'm supposed to drive at 14. The car I'm not even supposed to have, stole it. It was theirs, but I still stole it.
Oh, jeez.
And okay, so now I'm driving high, was just raped and drugs, hoping I don't kill anybody, whatever actually killing somebody means, because at 14, I'm pretty sure you can't grasp the concept of life and death and the finality of it wholly and completely. So there I was, driving wicked awful state to get home, only to get home and walk through the door. And then I'm crying because I'm scared, everything that had just happened to me. And instead of receiving what should have been, I am so sorry. I mean, we get backup of what should have been like 6 hours prior, but that's the first time my dad had really laid his hands on me. So at that point, I got pushed against the wall. I got called every awful name you could think of that you would call a young woman, girl, whatever you wanted to call me. I mean, 14, come on. I'm a little girl at that point.
Yeah.
But I was called all sorts of horrible names. And he slapped me around, tossed me against the wall. And that ought to teach her. So, well, maybe that's how he was dealt with as a kid. I don't know. He never really talked about his childhood. So I went to bed just shamed and scared, and knew that I couldn't tell him everything that had happened that night. Mm-hmm. So I figured I would just keep it to myself, and I would just keep smoking and hurting myself. Yeah. So there were multiple suicide attempts on my part. And, you know, one of them was, I had a handful of pills, and I was waiting for them to walk by to stop me. So I watched as my dad and my mom were walking by, and I said, okay, there's dad. And in my mind, I thought, I've got this handful of pills. I don't even know what the pills were. They were in an orange bottle, had a white cap. And I thought,
gummy bears.
Well, that would have been better. But I thought, well, whatever they are, if I take enough of them, I'll just go to sleep and this will all be over. And I don't have to think about it anymore. I don't have to live with it anymore. So I took the handful. He saw me. I meant him to see it. And he came in, and there was an intervention. It just wasn't what I hoped it would be. He slapped the pills out of my hand. He like grabbed my cheeks, you know, where you can make somebody pucker when you grab their face. And he shook it until I spat out all of them. And then again, you know, my head got thrown against the wall, and he told me what a effing coward I was for not actually going through with it. He's like, you can't even kill yourself right. And I'm like,
Oh my God.
That's not exactly what I was hoping for. So that, you know, that escalated into, you know, I stared down the barrel of his gun. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it this time. And, you know, they had tons of weapons. We always did growing up in Alaska, but he never kept them locked up. I suppose he never assumed we would touch them. I had pointed it at my older sister and wanted to kill her. And then I wanted to kill myself. And I just wanted to be done with anything. So again, I sucked at killing myself with pills, and apparently I sucked at trying to kill myself with a 44 Magnum, which by the way is really heavy. So yes, I doubt I would have been able to pull the trigger even if I had, you know, as he put it, the guts to pull the trigger.
No, I'm glad you failed.
Thank you. I'm actually really glad I did too, because there's a lot of beauty that's come out of my life through that. So, you know, as you can imagine, after, you know, a traumatic episode that night with the drinking and the boy and all that. Well, what do you know about 12 weeks later?
Okay.
And yeah, that didn't go well either. So there was a lot more trauma, you know, regarding my parents and what that looked like and why I don't have a 20 some year old child at this point. But to spare you the awful details of what was said to me at that point, there was one phrase that stuck with me far longer than it should have, which was, nobody deserves to have you as a mother.
Oh my God.
So I grew up never wanting to have children.
Yeah, but
never
you
wanted
have
to be married.
Six kids.
I do have six amazing kids.
You got a brood,
now.
Man. I mean,
yep.
And they are all well behaved. I mean, they're great kids. They're well behaved. They're well spoken. They're,
and you know what? I've never had to throw anyone up against a wall to achieve it. No. Imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine that.
God, so, that's just awful.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So you go from this time period where you're seeking attention and all the wrong attention because you're hurting so much.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And then let's move forward a little bit. After high school, then what did you do? Where'd you go from there?
So I shifted gears in high school around junior year, and I went on to say, okay, I just want something different. I want something better. So I lettered in academics multiple times. My GPA went up. At that point, I was kind of the forgotten kid, so I never was mentored toward what do you do after high school. Well, I just assumed I would go to college, and on every level of my being, I knew I wanted to help people. I wanted to help people feel like they were worthy just by their sheer humanity. They didn't have to achieve anything. They just were, because they were people. And at that point, I didn't know Jesus Christ. So I am a practicing Catholic woman. We are from a Catholic, you know, my husband and I are Catholic family. So I didn't know God at that point, but I knew I wanted to help people. And so I graduated high school and I said, okay, there should be some college money somewhere, right, Mom and Dad? You said there would be. And they were like, ha-ha. No, we spent it. And I was like, oh gosh. And they were like, well, just get student loan debt like everybody else. Get a student loan. I thought, oh my gosh. So I went to college for the first year at the University of Alaska Anchorage and got some prereqs done. And at that point, I was working full time. I moved out just as soon as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I had a job at 14. I had to contribute to the household debt that apparently was my responsibility at 14, not saving for college, was to try and
what
get them
the
out
fuck?
Of debt.
Yeah.
Well, they, I mean, they were going to lose the house. So,
yeah.
And we, at one point, like I said, we skipped over a lot of the bad parts, you know, from me being homeless and getting my ass kicked on the regular out on the streets. But
wait,
I had
a what?
Well, yeah, there was a point where I was homeless and staying in a teen shelter. And turns out they don't like blonde haired white girls there. So I got kicked on quite a bit out there. So I thought, well, what's worse at this point, if I just put my head down and stay out of my parents' way and try and do something right, I will earn that attention and affection and all that. So that's what turned into the overachiever I am today. But I funneled that into a healthy way. So I've given myself a lot of grace since growing up, because I'm 38 now. And at that point it was, I'm just going to be the very best at everything. That way everybody will like me. Everybody will, you know, think highly of me, and this stuff will never happen again. So, as long as I'm good enough, you know?
So I have a question. So you went from what I would say very self-destructive behavior to, you know, obviously really focusing on achievement. What happened? What was the, was there a moment or was there some realization that happened when you said enough is enough?
Yeah, actually, I was doing my community service at the thrift store. I was a regular there, and I was untangling hangers, and gosh darn, I can't even remember the song at this point, but I heard a song and I felt the Holy Spirit, and it was like a voice in the back of my head that said, you know, you're worth it, right? Just as you are. You are perfect. And I am not perfect. I am broken. I am all of these things. And this voice said, no, you're not. You are not any of those. You are worth it. And I just dropped to my knees and did what I thought looked like praying. I think I'd seen people in a movie do it. So I said, I just want to be different. I want to have a different life. And I just knew at that point I could have a different life. And what would that look like? So really, it was just quiet reflection on where I had been and where I wanted to go. And what could that shift look like? So I thought, well, I'll start off just trying to be the person that people want you to be. They want to see people achieve. They want to see academics go well and, you know, go on to college. So I said, okay, well, I'll do those things. So I attempted to do student government and, you know, nobody liked me. So that didn't work. I tried out the cheerleading squad. Well, the girls there didn't like me either. So I got kicked off promptly because they knew the second they picked on me and initiated a fight that I would follow through. And I did. And of course got kicked off.
Pound them with their pom-poms.
That was that. Well, falling off the pyramid will definitely get you punched in the nose. She let go of my foot on purpose. I am determined that was some serious mean girl act going on.
You played soccer, didn't you?
As an adult, not as a kid. Okay. No, I never did a single league thing. The only thing I did was I was a martial artist. So I have a black belt in Kenpo, and my mom paid for the first month of it to get me going. And after that, I had my own job. I had my babysitting money, and I paid for my karate lessons all the way through until the facility shut down due to a divorce in their family. So that's why I fought, really, because I knew how, and that didn't save me from the guys, but you know.
Mm. So very interesting. So you said you did a year at University of Alaska Anchorage.
I did. And my desire to serve in the United States military was really strong at that point. And let's be honest, I needed some money for college. So I joined the Air Force, and I joined as
this was right around 9/11, right?
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I joined it as an enlisted troop because I thought, well, I'll serve in that capacity. And the reason I wanted to serve first as an enlisted troop is because I wanted to understand the perspective from the enlisted side, because I knew at some point I was going to be a leader. And at that point, my plan was to be a flight nurse in the Air Force. And I knew at that point I would be an officer, but I wanted to understand the troop mentality. What is it like for them? Because I can't be a good leader if I don't understand what goes through their head. So I would serve, you know, a term as an airman. And at that point, I was an air transportation apprentice. I started off in medical, but ended up transferring over. Sideline story, but I did end up transferring over and then transferred colleges to go to Valdosta State University. So I was serving at Warner Robins part-time, and then I was going to nursing school at Valdosta State. So at that point, they called me up active duty and said, okay, you're deploying. I thought, you can't deploy while you're in college, right? Wrong.
Oh, so, yes, you can.
Yes, you can. You can. And you did. So that's what I did for a year is I went over to the desert and I actually served in the desert for about 7 months. And that was an interesting time. I grew a ton as a person showing up on station. I didn't know anything about my job, what I was supposed to be doing. And I couldn't even tell the difference between a C-5 and a C-130 because I was brand new out of tech training.
So the size, right?
Size matters. Sure. Yeah. Always does.
Jet versus prop, right?
Sure. Yep. Yeah. That's the other thing.
Prop.
Oh yeah. That's the other
jet
thing.
Prop.
Yeah.
I had a podcast with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't you feel sorry for me?
Which one's
talk
the
about adversity.
C-130.
Thank you.
So yeah, all the cargo planes.
You know, it's difficult playing the dumb guy, right?
But you make it look so easy.
No, you are so far from dumb.
Come on,
so, but we'd so like far. To joke.
Yes, he's
loved Darren.
Listen, he's the podcast whipping boy, okay? somebody's got to play that role, right? I think every podcast needs a whipping boy. Or did I make that up?
I probably made it up. Get a few beers in them.
Yeah, that's awesome. So obviously you grew a lot in the military.
Oh, absolutely. So I felt like I was part of a mission that was bigger than myself.
Right.
So, and that was my whole objective. How can I serve the most amount of people and be the most beneficial? And I thought, well, all of America, that's pretty good. That's pretty big. So I'll do that. Mm-hmm. Well, in that meantime, I ended up meeting who is now my husband.
Da-da.
And he's a pretty fantastic guy and really the only guy who could have. And he didn't change my mind. So I say he changed my mind, but I changed my mind after seeing, golly, just the caliber of human that he is. And I thought, I think I could make babies with that guy.
change your mind about having kids.
Having kids and having being kids. Married.
Sorry, I had to get that out.
Yes, because remember, point. At that point, I still wanted nothing to do with marriage or children.
Exactly. Men are evil at this point.
Mm-hmm. Still. Everyone pretty much was
human.
Yeah, I mean, most parents, for sure, were terrible.
Well, this is a really important concept. I mean, you know, as a young person, if you're surrounded by people that constantly let you down, you know, you think that that's all there is in the world. And then when somebody does come along like Superman and it's like, oh, my God, faith in humanity is restored. Well, I think when did you really find God officially?
Okay, so the official founding of God was in basic training.
Really?
So, yeah, it was in basic training. So for anyone who's been into basic training, the only place that you can go and, you know, drop your shoulders and not walk in it, you know, in a certain way and not speak in a certain way is to church. And I was not a believer. So I'm like, well, I'm not going there. Well, of course, you know, I'm picked on a lot because I'm not ugly. So therefore, that meant you were made fun of. You were called princess. And I was very fit. I actually gained weight in basic training because they overfed me. So I was very fit. I'm not bad looking. So I got made fun of a lot and picked on a lot. So the only way to get away from the TIs who, you know, persistently wanted to torture me was to go to church. And I thought, fine, if it just gets me away from all of these people, I will go. Yeah. So I went there and sitting in the back, smug as hell, arms crossed, slouched down, like, I'm not buying into this bullshit. I'm just here to get away from the other people. Well, you know, kind of creeps in and then week over week as to, you know, as Lord would have it, started speaking to me and I left a Christian. I came in just a devout atheist that all Christians were, you know, lambs being led to their own slaughter.
So you had a moment like that back at the thrift store.
Mm-hmm.
You felt a movement in you.
Mm-hmm.
And then that subsided.
It did. Mm-hmm. And the world crept back in.
Then you eventually you're in the military, you're hanging out in Georgia, which is, we know, kind of a religious state, but not there. You go to a desert across the ocean where Christianity is not really practiced well.
Well, the basic training was before the desert.
Okay.
So when I went to the desert.
Basic training.
Right.
Where you found you were just going there for solitude and.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it hit you.
Yep, that's where it hit me. So I left there a Christian. Whatever that meant. So I left there a Christian. So I thought, all right, I got to find a church. And at that point, Catholicism wasn't a thought in my mind. I was like, I'll just go to one of the churches that have a band and seems fun. Mm-hmm. So I was very young in my faith journey. And when I met Adam, I actually went to pick him up, like a good feminist, on our second date. And and I was like, you're riding with me, buddy. You know, the first time was like, I'll meet you at the restaurant.
Can I at least ride shotgun?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if this shit goes sideways, I'm the one who's saying when we're leaving.
Can't let those walls down yet.
Oh, man. No way. So I poked my head in his room and I saw a rosary and I was like, hey, is that a rosary? And I remember he stopped and he poked his head back around the corner of the bathroom. He was just finishing up shaving. He's like, yes. I said, what are you, Catholic or something? And he stopped, looked at me square in the eye and said, yes, is that going to be a problem? I was like, no. So
he's loading up his bottles of holy water.
I love this guy already.
I was like, all
is
righty.
Is that going to be a problem?
Well, I will add that to the list of things I'm about to torture you with at dinner tonight, because there was a list. I'm like, all right, which party do you vote with? Yeah. What matters to you in life? Oh. How do you treat your mother? I mean, there was an entire piece of paper and he was just like, I am dating psycho. But I don't know why he stuck around.
Date two. Uh-huh.
That was second. Yeah. Second date.
Just get it all out.
Were you taking then? Notes? What? Like, were you writing it down?
Nope. Mental. Steel trap all upstairs.
It's a woman. They don't forget anything ever. Don't you know that?
Well, I was watching everything because I'd been a waitress before. So I'm like, how's he treat the server? Is he good to her? And it's like, yes, of course.
He's but not too good.
Ridiculously kind. Yeah. Like, oh, chick with big boobs just walked by. Is he going to look? No, he didn't. Because turns out he just, you know, he's not gay, clearly, but he doesn't sexualize women ever. He's incredibly kind to everybody he meets. So, I mean, he passed that test and then on to the third date and, you know, the rest is history.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, man, a lot happened to you in the military.
Oh, yes. So I ended up separating and because he was still in the service, he's a pilot. So he had a lot of time he had to give back. And at that point, you know, we were engaged. We actually got engaged before I went to the desert. And in the desert is where I found Catholicism because I thought, well, this guy's Catholic. And clearly faith in general was a deal breaker for him. But being Catholic wasn't. He said, you know, you come about your journey how you need to. This is who I am, and we can work with that. And I thought, well, while I'm over here, I might as well look into whatever his faith is and just, mm-hmm. I'm just going to see about it. I'm going to mm-hmm. see a man about a rosary.
Yeah. Where did all this begin?
It actually explains the six kids.
Yeah.
Because you know, that's Catholic.
For life, baby.
See, I'm from Boston. So, I mean, the good Catholic families, they just...
Well, away you go.
Lots and lots of kids.
Oh, I like to say I'm a pro-life feminist.
There you go.
We're a different breed. And there's a very, very clear distinction between a pro-life feminist versus just straight up feminists.
Right.
I don't hate men. Love them, clearly.
I've seen a Monty Python movie about that.
So you guys separated, you said?
Separated like just
From the military. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I... got out of the military. No, he and I never separated.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
No.
So let me
see. It's a military thinking, hey, term. I might become Episcopalian instead. He's like, no, that's a deal breaker right there.
No. Maybe. So I looked into the faith while I was there, and turns out I really loved it. So I became Catholic while I was deployed and never told him.
A lot of people
him.
Find Catholicism in the Middle East.
Those people are hanged.
Yeah, they're hanged. Or they throw them off buildings and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can always open up an icebreaker like that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's not going to be a problem. Is my faith going to be a problem for you?
Like I found Catholicism in the Middle East.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
It's like the guys that you took out that one time and you said for the business thing and they loved bacon so much and they were Muslim.
Two super devout Muslims that went to the same mosque and we were drinking. Which they really
with
weren't
the
supposed
Muslims?
To do. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. No way.
And then they got tipsy and the ones like, cause we started talking and I'm like, how can you guys live without bacon? Like, I don't understand it. And the guy's like, I got to confess. I love bacon. And then the other Muslim's like, oh my God, you do? I do too.
Oh my goodness.
I go out to breakfast by myself every Saturday so I can have bacon. And they're like, oh my God, let's go have bacon together. It was the funniest thing ever.
Yes. I work with guys like that. They call it halal pork.
Yeah.
It is.
Hey, listen, God wouldn't have made it so delicious if he didn't want you to eat it. So,
well, I did eat a pizza with questionable toppings. They called it pepperoni, but I begged a different.
That was in the middle. That was over there.
That was not.
Halal pepperoni.
Pepperoni. Mm. I don't know what the hell it was.
It's just vegan.
Better that you not know.
So you get back.
It's one of those Morningstar pepperonis.
Question, during all this time, because we know who you are today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have even like... somewhere and any inkling of an idea that I want to become an entrepreneur for a lack of a better term way back then at all?
No, business owner was never part of my,
you were focused
my
on
Rolodex.
Military, Landon
it was
Adam.
Service. How can I serve the most people in the best way?
Right.
So that started off as you know, being high achiever the last few years of high school. And then that turned into the military. And then that turned into graduating from nursing school and then becoming a nurse. So I worked in medical oncology and I worked in geriatrics. I worked in pediatrics. So I love, love, love being a nurse. I did separate from the Air Force. So the dream of being a flight nurse was not realized because we didn't want two dual service members. Because at that point I had been convinced now, yes, I will have children with that man and that man only. So, you know, we knew we would have kids at some point. So I got out of the military and just worked as a nurse. And I loved it more than anything. So we went on to have our first kiddo. And that's, I did go back as a nurse for a short time, but it just didn't feel right being away from the baby. So I was like, okay, now what? You know, I get it. I'm serving my family. I'm a stay-at-home mom at that point. I am supporting my husband's aviation career in the military. But I had the calling to serve in such a broader context was so strong. And I thought, I've got to do something else. What can I do? And so years and years. So that turned into, I mean, I was a Bradley Method instructor. I taught natural childbirth. So I've had all of my babies without drugs. And so I've taught fitness. I turned into teaching the Billings method of natural family planning. So I've taught that. So education. So it shifted into education at that point. So I am helping people in such a tremendous way. That is a underserved population of people that are not being taught their patient advocacy rights. So as a nurse, I had enough medical knowledge to say, you know, you can alter, you know, you can change that, by the way. You do not have to do what they what they're telling you to do. I was basically run out of Panama City, Florida as a childbirth educator there because the obstetricians hated that they now had clients coming in there advocating for their own personal rights. And so they put me out of business. They said they would not see any person who had been to my classes in their clinic anymore.
Doctor needs a second Porsche.
That's badass.
Mm. Oh, man. Well, yeah. It broke my heart, but I was you freaking bastards.
Yeah.
So, you know, at that point, it turned into...
You're lighting the fire at this point.
Oh, man. It turned into education. So I really loved educating, but I knew I didn't want to go into a classroom setting because they've got rules on how you can educate.
Shocking. And, she doesn't like rules.
No, I do not. Weird. So, you know, where that turned into later was just listening to podcasts to keep my brain stimulated and then an opportunity to become my own business owner and work from home in a field that I really enjoyed because I've always been a health advocate. So I've got a great group on Facebook where I put meal plans out there all for free. I support people's knowledge and learning more holistic and homeopathic ways to treat their family and how to feed them well and what whole foods look like and why we don't fad diet and stuff. Seems like you've had a guest on before that is very much in the same line of thinking as I, or maybe I as she, either way.
We're kind of in lockstep with
that. Right, right.
Work out there.
Oh,
well, let me stop us and rewind a little bit here.
Sure.
So you went from, you know, a life of significant adversity. I mean, I think anybody listened to this story, and I think we probably glossed over some of the really traumatic moments. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really like about you and your story is coming back from such a really difficult place in life. I mean, I'm sitting here listening to your story and I had it tough, but it's like, God dang, man, I didn't have it nearly as tough as you. And I think that I love hearing stories like this because every single one of us faces adversity. And there's a couple things I think are important. Number one, anytime you meet somebody, never make any assumptions about what they've gone through. And I think that's really important, especially when we're looking into the field of entrepreneurism or business owners or people in business, right? A lot of times you look at them, you're like, man, here's somebody really successful. And I think a lot of times your instinct is, well, they probably had it easier than I did because they got this big badass business and,
oh, sure,
you know, maybe had rich parents, or you're trying to make excuses for their success. Sometimes behind that success is a story of adversity that would make yours blush. I'm like, no, fuck.
Oh, sure. Well, they just assume
that's what adversity looks like.
There's some level of privilege, you know, that I was given as a as a woman, or, you know, as a white woman, or, you know, the fact that I had two parents. Yeah, I had two of them, you know, double the fun there. I think probably some of the most tremendous people in this world are people who have dug themselves out of a grave, either figuratively or literally.
Right.
Or, you know, had been staring down, you know, the devil toe to toe and said, now what? Who makes their first move? And thankfully, you know, I sidestepped that force and moved on from that.
I'll give you. So here's a good example. I've known you for a while now. One of the things that I hear people constantly say about you is that, you know, oh, well, Tiffany's got all this energy. You know, she's got all this energy. Mm-hmm. Like it's something given to you.
Right.
What they don't realize is all the work that you put into having that energy. Mm-hmm. You know, people will make excuses for your success. People will make assumptions about where you've been in life. And it's important not to do that, because you might find two people that have very, very similar success stories. And one of them had a charmed life, really didn't have much adversity, maybe had mom and dad leave them a nice big nest egg when they passed away. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And somebody else, you know, literally crawled themselves out of the depths of hell. You don't know which one it is until you learn that story. But I think it's really important not to make judgments about people and where you think they've been in life. Because this is...
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It is. But it's also not... You don't have to... I mean, one up another... I agree with you. And you should know who the person is. And I mean, if you really care about them and want to know their background and where they've come from... Tiffany has a lot of energy. She's also very outspoken.
I am.
In a good way.
Here's my point in saying that, though. Let me finish my point, because I think this is really critical. What happens is a lot of times we make those assumptions, right? Mm-hmm. But then we get to know the person in the story and the adversity they overcome, and all of a sudden you're like, I get it. And I got this level of respect for you, and you deserve it all. Like it can change your relationship with somebody, can change your perception of somebody in a very positive way, knowing that they overcame adversity. But so often we're not willing to figure out if there was that, because everybody's got their story it to some level. But some people have this just amazing comeback story in life. And I think it's important to try to figure out if people have those, because they can be very, very inspiring. Because what happens is when you meet somebody that goes through that, like I hear your story and it inspires me. It inspires me to be better. It inspires me to dig deeper, to try harder. And that's a gift you have. That's a gift you have to tell people about that story. And so that's a responsibility you have, is to share that with others, which you do so eloquently. You pull no punches. You know, you're not ashamed of it, which is great. Mm-hmm. But I think we also have a responsibility to drag it out of people, to ask, to have that dialogue with people.
Would you like her any less, or respect her any less, if she had just grown up in middle-class suburbia and had a typical normal life?
Yes.
You would?
No.
Okay. I don't know that I would be the same person, though.
But exactly. I wouldn't respect her any less. That's not the right word. I probably would not learn some of life's wisdom from her like I would.
There you go.
Knowing where she's come from. You'd still like her
as a person. You would still embrace her as a human being that we share space and time with. But that it's like, you know what? When she says certain things, I want to tune in and listen, because it's coming from a different place. I agree with you.
We've all had that experience where you sit down with somebody and you realize something's happened in their life and you're like, oh, tell me more. And you're like just a sponge. Mm-hmm. Listening to them, absorbing it, going, God dang, this is great. And you walk away inspired in your own life, wanting to do things. And I think it's really important to try to drag that out of people. A lot of times we're afraid to have those conversations.
Oh, like, they're hard and they're uncomfortable, right, though,
like,
you know?
We just meet and we're sitting here talking about, you know, your life. And it's like, you know, so Tiffany, did you have a fucked up childhood?
Yeah.
Could you tell me about that a little bit?
Might have had a messed up childhood.
Right. How do you start that conversation?
No, I'm just drawing a parallel here to, like, as far as, like, when you guys were just talking, I was thinking about, like, an old World War II veteran, right? Mm-hmm. Think of the stories and the adversity that he or she has gone through, and how they're so hesitant to tell their story, right? But when they do speak, oh my gosh, you listen, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So when somebody's gone through, you know what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people haven't placed a purpose for their pain yet. And I think right. that's where they hold back and they pretend that they're somebody that they are not. And they pretend that everything's been easy for them. And no, I don't want you to know that really ugly side of my history. Like, who wants to talk about, you know, an abortion at 14 when you're now a practicing Catholic, very pro-life woman? Well, right. turns out I didn't get a choice in that. So there's a lot of healing that had to be done through that. And that affected the greater part of my early 20s in how I would bond with my husband, how I would turn out to be a mother, how I treated other people in business, and just to be a good human and recognize that when you've come out of the fires of hell, there is a whole lot of beauty in the living. Mm-hmm. So all the current drama, none of that gets to me in the slightest, because, you know, my world, my life does not end here on this planet. For me, there is something far greater. So I don't miss an opportunity to hug a friend when I see them. I just don't care about that.
Right.
Yep. Because I know how finite.
Right. Well, during COVID, you were like that when you were like, we're coming out just for a little bit today. And she's like, please tell me you still hug.
Yes. Yeah. And it was like, I want your arms around me in the most platonic way.
Right. Adam, I hope you're listening. She said platonic.
Yep.
We never stopped.
Yep.
No, I mean, I'm from the very beginning, I was skeptical. You guys know that. But
you never hugged me.
Sure.
I never do because you stink. You get what? To working outside and you won't take it. Okay, you did today.
He's like, legit.
Normally
just today.
We see each other like
I have 7 acres. I do.
Yeah. Normally we see each other outside sweating and all this craziness. Yeah. It's disgusting. It's like,
well, I'm 6 weeks out of having a baby. So I sweat during the middle of the night and I didn't shower this morning. So if you guys are smelling funky, that's probably me.
Nah, we're all good. We're all family here. Going back to this, I think it's important that we're able to share these things. And one of the things that you said that I think is also very wise, one of my other takeaways is that when you get to a place where you've created success in your life, you hit the nail on the head. Being able to talk about the things that you've done that maybe you weren't proud of, or right. those experiences or your failures, whether it's business or personal life or whatever, talking about those things can be extremely educational to folks that you mentor, whether or not you realize it. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you talk to somebody and they're paying more attention to you than you could ever imagine. And when you talk about things like, yeah, I screwed something up, I openly talk about failures that I've had in the past with no shame whatsoever. I mean, Glenn Gould came on the show and talked about, yeah, I got fired and, you know, failed at some businesses. And then, you know, it was Steve last week that said, you only need to get rich once, mm-hmm. you know, like we don't care. Fucked up a bunch. And then, you know,
stay wealthy.
Right. But the thing, but my point is so many people, you're absolutely right. So many people don't want to talk about those failures. Mm-hmm. And they're really important because we all have failures. We all face adversity and at some level. And knowing that somebody that you look up to mm-hmm. made mistakes and you're like, oh, they're like me. That right. now makes it like, okay, so if they did it, because one of the things, whether or not you realize you have an opportunity for young women. For a lot of young women that have went through what you've gone through.
I hope so.
And are still going through where you were 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And when you talk to them and you say, here's what I went through and look at me today, mm-hmm. that could be the one thing that gives them enough hope to turn their life around.
Gosh, I hope so. Because what would have my pain have served in this lifetime if I were not to create a purpose for other right, people right. to have benefited from it? So although that all really sucked in a very large way, I've been able to embrace that and say, okay, you know, God didn't make that happen to me. God knows he does not want, you know, the slaughter of innocent babies. But with the drug use and all of the stuff and homelessness and all that, if I can just turn, you know, that package of a complete shit show into something that gives someone else hope and some perseverance for their own future, Like it will have been worth it to say, okay, I can do better by this. I don't have a choice to fix what happened back then. I can't change who my parents are. They don't have anything to do with me today. They've said, yeah, we love you. But I'm like, I don't identify with your choice in what love looks like, because none of that looked like love to me. So when you grow up and that's the example of love, you're like, well, how is love supposed to be? Mm-hmm. And honestly, I learned what love looked like through my husband. He is, he showed so much grace when he shouldn't have. I was a pain to be married to for the first year because I didn't trust him. Why didn't I trust him? I don't know, because people just weren't trustworthy and he was a person. So therefore he was lumped into that group. So every time he went out, you know, and he was on TDYs, I accused him of having an affair and he was just like, oh my gosh, I really did marry crazy. And he kind of did for our first year and a half or two.
I was flying jet fighters and risking my life thinking about him. You.
Well, and bless him, because he was like, I don't even know what to do. And then, you know, slowly I was like, I'm going to drive this man away. I'm going to do the exact thing I don't want to have happen if I don't figure out my own mess. So I started reading books, self-help books, and trying to work on myself. So when people say you need to work on your issues, like, no, they're not just saying that so that you'll go away. I mean, you really do need to talk to somebody, read some books, listen to some podcasts. This human evolution to become a better human for everybody, for me, has been well over a decade in the works. So as far as a business owner, I thought, how can I serve the most people? Because remember, I want to benefit other people's lives, but I don't want a storefront. I don't want something that takes me away from these babies, because they are my mission in this life, is to raise these six beautiful souls into people that will not go out into the world and harm others. Yes, they're smart kids and they will do well in whatever they choose to do. But most importantly, I want them to be good humans. I want them to be stewards of their gifts of kindness and bless other people in this world. So that's what I focus on in raising them, and why I've chosen in short order to keep them home and homeschool them, because I have the greatest influence on them. And my influence, although I mess up just like every other normal person, I think is greater, far greater than what the school system could influence upon them, or definitely what the world is going to put on them. I want to give all of that to them and say, look, at the end of the day, you could be as rich as you want. If you're an asshole, none of that matters. So you practice being a good human. Yes, you will hold open the door. Although she says, I don't need you to hold the door. Yes, you do. My son asked me the other day, why do people comment when I hold the door for them? Doesn't everybody do that?
It's like, a trick. Just like when she says, it's a trick. Just like when she says, I don't want anything for Christmas.
No. Yeah.
It's a lie.
I got news for you.
It's a test.
I do that with somebody who wasn't used to it. So I have a friend that I've been spending time with, and we'll be riding together. And I'm like, let me get your door. Car door. And first, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. Now, when she gets near the door, she waits to see if I'm going to open the door for her. So it's like, you can learn these things. And it's not a man and I should do that. It's just a chivalrous, nice gesture. I do it all the time for people here.
Right. I think a lot of people don't accept help, though, because they see it as some reflection on them. Like, if I accept help, that's you telling me that I am incapable. And I, gosh knows, I used to be that person.
I feel better at holding the door for a man, really. Like, if I'm coming out of the gas station or whatever, I'll hold the door for a man. Because they're like, oh, hey, thanks, man. And but I hold the door for a woman. She's like,
you son of a bitch.
I'm tough enough. Gosh. I can open the door by myself.
Yeah. Okay. I'm like, it's just basic human kindness, you know? And I will call men out, though, at the store. If my son is holding a door open and these ladies are walking past and a man walks through and doesn't take the door, I call him out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, no, sir, you will not stand there and let my 12-year-old son hold the door for your sorry butt. You get over there and take the door from him and continue to hold it for the other people. And
unless,
they're like,
boom, unless
he's carrying,
because like one of the things
two,
I'll
six
do
packs
is
of Lion Creek beer.
I will tell that 12.
You can stack them under one arm.
Or you tell that 12-year-old, thank you, sir. You make them feel like, you know, you make it a learning moment. Like, oh, this is what being a man is supposed to look like. That's great. Mm-hmm. But if they just walk past you, I'm the same way. Like, the fuck's wrong with you?
No, I'm like, turn back around, sir. Come take that door. You're not going to let my 12-year-old son hold the door open for you. He's not your
jackass.
Bitch.
I didn't do that with my girl. I mean, with my daughters, I do the same thing. Emily was just here. And it's like, I still get the door for them. And it's too easy these days to, with
remote control mm-hmm. unlocks. It's like, yeah, unlock the door. You're fine. It's like, no, you still go over. It's just a, I don't know. That's how I was raised.
Oh, man. So if Adam and I ever get a date night, which doesn't happen often, but when
you
it
open
does.
Open the door for him and you
no,
drive still.
No, absolutely not. I will stand outside that door. And if he forgets, I tap on the window. I'm like, back around. Come on. Come over here and open my door. And he's like, oh, yeah, sorry, sorry.
You got to earn it tonight, boy.
Run back around. Yeah.
Guess who's on diaper and bottle duty tonight? Yep. Mama's sleeping well.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to talk about your... So you have six kids, and you recently had a beautiful daughter. Congratulations.
Yes,
how long?
You.
3 weeks? 4 weeks?
Six weeks now.
6 weeks? You know, six look weeks. At me.
Middle of July.
Jesus. Yeah, time's flying. So
no,
congratulations.
August 2nd. I was due August, at July. The end of July.
You know what year this is?
Yeah. It's a shit show.
So it's a blur. At least I was closer than he was.
You were staying at home and homeschooling, right? For how long?
Their whole lives.
So
Ever.
So my oldest will be 13 in December, and I've always homeschooled them all.
Okay.
The whole time.
So she homeschooled.
How long have you
way before COVID?
Same time. Yeah. Ella's 14. So yeah.
And you just started this year.
Yeah.
So you guys.
And let me clarify here. If you're doing virtual school on the computer with a teacher, it's different from homeschooling. And I am not here to tell you that my way is better than your way. I'm saying your way is way harder. That is way more difficult than how we do it.
Yeah. No, we actually are homeschooling now, just like you guys are. So
yeah.
Three of us in the room here homeschooling. How about that? Nice. But anyways, so you obviously
who's
got into
adopt. Who's going to adopt Aaron?
Well, actually, Emily
is almost geriatric. No.
Well, my 22-year-old is doing her internship, and this is her last semester of college, so I guess she's doing good there. And
there
then,
you go.
Actually, Emily is homeschooled, but she's just doing virtual for the semester, so it's like,
right.
Yeah. But it's at the virtual school, not through the county.
So anyways, I want to get into
be done by December.
I want to get into your mindset because you were in a place where, you know, your husband was a fighter pilot. Mm-hmm. He came out. Now he's an airline pilot, makes a great living.
He's both. Oh, he still works.
Yeah. He's in the reserves, too. Right? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So he's both.
Reserves to serve.
Yeah. Forever. So makes a great living, right?
Yes.
You're homeschooling, but you wanted more out of life.
I did.
I think a lot of women kind of struggle with some of the same things that you struggled with, which is, you know, trying to find, you know, purpose beyond, you know, your children and your home life. And I want you to talk to us about that whole thought process with you and how you ended up finding Scout and Seller and starting that business.
So it was actually funny. There is an exact moment that it shifted for me, and I can tell you exactly what that was. So I was talking to Adam like, hey, I want to go on trips. I want to go to Italy. I want to go all these places with our children. I want to explore the world with them. And he said, we'll have plenty of time to do that when they're gone. And I was like, I don't want to do it when they're gone. I want to do it with them. I want to show them that there's beauty everywhere because, you know, I had shifted from a place where I thought everything was horrible. People were awful. There was nothing but doom and gloom and might as well be gone from it to no. There's way more beauty in this world than we give it credit for. I said, and he's like, you know, as a pilot or whatever, the pay scale's published everywhere. You can look at it yourself and see, okay, this is how much that guy makes. And he said, we have too many kids. And he told me, we can do it all, Tiff. We just can't do it all right now. And I thought, no. No.
Don't like that answer.
That's typical. Yeah, sorry.
I'm like, I'm going to choose option E, which is my way. And my way is going to make that all happen in this life, in this time right now. And he was like, okay. He's like, there she goes. She's off on her crazy. He's like, well, how is that going to happen? So
when I said typical, that's typical for you. That was I would expect that. Like,
and he didn't have any other reaction.
Tell me, hell no, watch this.
Yes. He didn't have any other reaction than, okay, what do you got?
as soon as he said it, he realized, oh shit.
Yeah, he was like,
oh look
gosh.
What I've done now.
Yeah, because, you know,
she's going to prove me wrong. Here it
the
goes
clouds
again.
Started filtering around my head. It was like, oh, there's a storm brewing. She's onto something. So I said, all right, well, I'm going to figure out what is it that I can do that still allows me. He's like, well, okay, you know, what could you do? Well, I don't want to go back to a job. I love being a nurse, but that's going to take me away from the kids. He's like, I don't think there's anything you can do that would allow you to be a mom and still be able
again.
To business. And I'm like, the minute you tell me that can't be done, I'm going to find a way to prove it can. So from that moment on, that is when I learned about the industry of network marketing and how you could do that. So, you know, I knew that I had to have a product that resonated with me. I knew I had to have, it had to be mission focused. Remember, this has never gone away for me.
Network marketing or multi-level marketing?
Well, network marketing, multi-level marketing, same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure people understand that there's
synonymous. We're military. We like to abbreviate things. So same thing. Yes. So I thought, well, let me figure out why people fail, because I knew that there was a stigma attached to the industry and I needed to know what it was and why it was there. Well, I met enough of them to know why it was there. I was like, wow, you are really aggressive in an unnecessary way. Mm-hmm. And then I met one woman in particular who's also, her spouse is in the military. She's just a high achieving human soul and just a beautiful person. And she was part of the industry. So I thought, well, if she's part of this, she is an amazing person and has never come on, you know, aggressively or anything. She just said, hey, you're into this. I'm into this. Maybe you'd be interested. And I thought, well, if she's part of it, there's got to be something there. So I looked into it and there was something there. And I thought, man, if you can get outside of yourself and outside of what can you as a consumer do for me as the provider, and you just start looking at how can I serve the most people in the broadest context, then you will be successful in the end. And that's what I did. And here I am.
Yeah. And we've actually had so if you've not listened, if you're one of our new subscribers, we actually did an episode focused on direct selling, multi-level marketing companies, mm-hmm. and how to find the real opportunities versus the bullshit.
Yep.
Cause there's the problem with that industry is there's so many fucking thieves that it, right. it makes it difficult to find out where the real opportunities are.
Sure.
But we actually had Karen Koenig on the show. She was one of our early interviews.
Yeah, she was. That was back on the farm.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Recording in the closet.
Back in the non-air-conditioned closet. Yeah. Yeah. We actually
It was actually a closet.
With no air conditioning. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Nice.
Yeah, we've come a long way. But she was one of our early interviews and talked about Scout & Seller, mm-hmm. the company that you represent.
But that wasn't the first one that you were with.
No.
Oh, it wasn't? So, no. Oh, I didn't know that.
No.
Yeah. Nope. So I started out with a different company, and that was the woman that I had met. And she actually taught me from the ground level everything that I knew about serving people in a way that was unselfish, but still contributed to your personal success. So I learned everything I knew from her. So, you know, that might beg the question, why didn't you stay with that company? Well, that company became a lot more political and started moving away from the mission and started lobbying a whole lot more on the governmental side. And that's where I drew the line. I believe in personal freedoms greatly, and I don't think that we need more laws around any industry. So I thought, well, this is no longer a grassroots effort. So the mission no longer aligned with me, although I still loved the products. I wasn't going to stay part of something that didn't align with my personal values. So I exited stage left from that company. And then that's when I learned about Scout & Seller, and a bottle of wine was given to me because I had 5 kids at the time. Clearly I drank wine. And I said, well, actually I don't, because I feel terrible. But I tried the product and I said, you know what? This is actually a mission focused company. And I have to have a mission. I have to have some way that I'm serving in such a broader context. I couldn't just sell nose hair trimmers because they were fantastic. And, you know, I just couldn't do it. It had
everybody
to be mission
needs
focused.
Them, though.
Well, everybody named
there
Darren.
Is a mission too.
Yeah, that. You three may need them. I haven't looked up your schnozzes yet,
don't.
But
it's
scary. I'm good to go.
Yeah. I'm not afraid. I'm not scared.
I am. I'm afraid to look up your schnoz.
It looks good.
I'm sure it does.
You know,
well groomed.
Heard that phrase schnoz. That's been a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I have all the old fun words.
Yeah, you do. So we were talking about the conversation we had with Karen. Mm-hmm. Scout & Seller is an amazing company.
It is.
It's one of those things where I don't even remember the first time I was actually introduced to Scout & Seller.
I know when I was.
That's because you got drunk.
Yeah, no, and wait, I didn't feel bad the next day. So I love wine. When you started with Scout & Seller, though, how much did you know about wine?
Nothing.
Wow.
I just knew that I had a headache when I drank it, and then I stopped drinking it. And we actually make beer at my house as part of our homeschool curriculum. Science, anybody?
Yes.
We can
come over.
Art is incorporated in there. The art, kids
we've
actually
got kids that need to learn.
I need to bring my kids over your house.
Yes. You do. No, it's actually pretty dope.
It's a homeschooled kind of...
My kids will design the label to it, and they'll name our batches, and then we use milk to adhere the label onto the bottles.
Right.
Yeah. And then they get to own that batch. Awesome. My daughter named one batch. It was an amber. She named it Roman Blood. And there was, no kidding, a Roman with a spear and, you know...
Was it a blood orange that was used to make
that's
that?
That's so awesome.
No, there was no blood orange, but it was a true blue amber.
Do you have a big driveway? I could park my RV in your driveway and just get
it's extensive.
He's going to stay there until it's completed with the fermentation process.
Yeah, I was just thinking about bringing a flatbed over and just kind of loading.
So, trying to do that.
Well, the great thing is even early on when you started with Scout and Seller, the videos that you posted, and because again, Tiffany's very open. She likes to talk about it. As she's going through it, she's like, this is my learning process. I don't know shit about wine, but tonight I'm drinking this one, and this is what they're telling me it should taste like and should be like.
Yeah.
And you're just honest. And it's like, let me see. And that's it. I mean, that's how but you shared your learning process with other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that instead of hiding behind it, like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, and I might be embarrassed if people don't understand it. I think it was a great way that you did it because it's like, you want to learn about wine? Me too. I don't know crap. I know I don't feel bad when I drink it. I feel a lot better. I know there's a lot of great things behind it. Now let's see if it's true. And you take all your customers kind of through the learning process as you did. Fabulous way. Fabulous market. Whether it was intentional marketing or just, this is who I am and this is what I'm going to do.
Well, I don't fake anything very well.
No.
So, trying to fake something was never going to work for me. And people would have seen right through that because I don't fake it. I mean, as they say, the resting bitch face per se, like I can't have the, I'm putting up with it and pretend to be something I'm not because people see right through me. So I'm transparent, to the point that I don't have to try to be, it just happens to be what it is.
It's great.
Great.
She ain't got time for that.
And you go back.
No.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Man. You start trying to be someone else, then you've got to create five different characters based off where you're at and who you associate with. Like, who am I supposed to be in this group of people? It's like, well, why don't you just do
exactly
you
right.
the entire time? And then you don't have to pretend to be somebody else in a different context.
Not do you.
Yeah.
So it's great. I always know where we're at, but.
Anyway. So I want to go back to this whole process of you starting the business. I mean, how difficult was it for you? Because we've talked to other women about this on the show, about kind of getting permission to be more than mom and kind of step out and do this. And you already had a lot of responsibility because you guys have collectively made the decision. You're homeschooling. There's a lot of responsibility in that. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, I'm going to get into this business that, even though you could do it from home, it takes a lot of time out of you. Like how did you work through that? What kind of struggles did you have getting into a business and
gosh,
in other words, when are you writing your book on time management?
Well, that's exactly what I was about to say. Like, okay, so I'm going to do this thing because you told me I couldn't, or not that I couldn't, but he was like, I don't see the end of that. Like, how does that even happen? But typical pilot brain, if it's not on a spreadsheet and it doesn't fit into a box perfectly, like you can't see the end equation on that one.
Yes.
And I thought, well,
I don't see it on the sectional.
I'm a bit more creative on this. So I'm going to figure out rather than say how, all the ways that it can't be done, I'm going to figure out how it can. So it started out, all right, well, it only takes me about 5 minutes to poop and I can reach out to like three people. So I'm going to do that because I don't really like an audience while that's happening. So like, all right, I'll do that. And okay, let's see. I got the kids going on math. There'll be about 6 minutes before somebody needs help with equation 12. So I've got 6 minutes. I can, talk about this and, I don't have to drink an entire glass of wine when I'm doing a video and posting about it on my IG. I can just take a sip and talk about it. How long does it take me to do that? Well, nobody wants to watch a video any longer, about 5 minutes anyway. So, all right, I've got a net 1 minute to go pee, do my quick video, taste the wine, put it back, and then go right back to what I was doing with the kids. So it just ended up like, how can I fit this into the pockets of my day? And before I had an infant, it was waking up early. So I would go to the WOD. That's the workout of the day. I'm a CrossFitter. Mm-hmm. So I would go to the gym at 5:15 and do the 5:15 class. And that would end at 6:15. I'd get home by 6:35, 6:40 in the morning, shower, eat. And then I'm like up and ready. I maybe have 45 minutes, which is golden in my industry. Turns out you don't need a ton of time to be very successful in my industry. So I would take that 45 minutes and do a lot of work before the kids even got up. So now with an infant, things have shifted a bit. And now I work more on the tail end of my day. So after I get all of the kids in bed, the baby's still up with me. But turns out she can nurse and I can type. And I'm getting really good at, you know, propping her up on my leg just so. And I can still type and do that. I can still do a video. I do tons of videos and post tons of pictures of me nursing her one-armed because I'm not shy about that. I'm not going to hide her. I'm not going to hide the fact that, you know, I'm a mother. So many people expect women to mother as if they don't work and then to work as if they're not moms.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Bam.
You can't,
I know
you
that's
can't do that.
That's
without,
pretty deep.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool. You have to honor wow. both sides of that. And I'm going to show both sides of that.
You know, it's interesting to hear you talking about that. Cause the one thing that, you know, since Kelly and I got into the real estate business, I think one of the biggest shifts for us, because we're on 7 days a week, was we've had to learn how to take pockets of time, you know, and get things done. Cause like, I don't have days off anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'll be working my ass off and all of a sudden it's like the rest of my afternoon just got cleared out. Okay, I'm going to do this project. I'm going to mow my field and I'm going to, you know, spend some time with the kids or whatever. Like you learn how to fit stuff in and recognize moments and recognize opportunities versus like, oh, I got this weekend off.
Oh, and I'm very intentional with my time. Mm-hmm. So I actually, and you know, I'm kind of examining this now, like, is this completely healthy? That everything I do has a purpose behind it.
Yeah.
I don't engage in any activity, honestly, that doesn't have a reason or a purpose for it. So every podcast I listen to, there's a reason behind it. It's either a business podcast or it's personal growth. And, you know, I've come a long way, but hey, man, I've still got a long way to go. I'm human, which means I'm going to mess up. So every book I read has a purpose. Every movie I watch has a purpose. Every interaction, people I keep in my life versus the people I keep at arm's length, it's all very purposeful.
That's really
interesting. So I have no idea what people like, I do that as a hobby. I'm like, what's a hobby? Why do you do it? If it doesn't serve some greater being, why do you engage in it? Like my brain doesn't even.
Self-enjoyment.
Here's the kicker is that everything I do that has a purpose, I actually really enjoy. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's dual. Like I work out because I want to be fit and I am here to smash the paradigm that you have to be fat and out of shape and lazy to be a mom. Because I have people tell me that all the time. Oh, you're really in great shape for having 6 kids. I'm like, can you just say you're in great shape and leave it at that? Why does it have to have the caveat for having 6 kids? So now we put this precedent upon women that in order to be a mother of many children, you must be frumpy, fat, lazy, eat your bonbons after they've gone to bed. No. How about you can be a mom, you can be fit, you can run a business, you can homeschool your kids, you can still be your husband's girlfriend. Good Lord, have sex with the man and still be sensual, still be an astute businesswoman, still be well-spoken, but still have a tongue like a sailor when the moment serves and you're just kicking up your heels and having a good time. You know that song, I'm Every Woman? Like, why yep. can't you embrace all of those different parts of who you are?
I think why? I don't see any reason why you can't.
Well, you know, society, the world, whomever that you're associating yourself with, they have told you that you can't in some way. So I want you to, I want all the women and even men to a degree. I don't know what goes on inside men's head. Most of them won't say it, but there's got to be some level of, I want to be more than, you know, the persona that I put out there. So why not?
I don't you're know actually, if you want to get in my head.
No, she's spot on. We've talked about this many times. Men are really bad at self-dialogue. Mm-hmm. We're terrible at it because, you know, I mean, shit, we talked about this when we had, when we had Molly on the show? Yeah, it was when we had Molly on the show. I talked about the fact that I went to see a counselor at one point. I didn't even realize I was having self-dialogue. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't even know what the hell it was till I sat down with somebody and she's like, so what are you saying to yourself when this happens? I'm like, nothing.
It's yeah, like, okay, no, everyone's you telling are, a story. Everyone's so telling think a story about to themselves.
It. Yeah, and then, you know, the more I became aware of how I reacted to certain, like, oh, I am saying things to myself. I didn't even know it. But I'm glad you're saying that, because we do. We have a tendency to put ourselves in boxes, mm-hmm. or just succumb to stereotypes or expectations or lack of expectations.
Oh, sure.
You know, and, you know, I'm of the, you know, I believe that if there's something you want, go take it. Mm-hmm. Right. Don't let anything stand in your way. We talked about that last week. Right.
I tried that though, but when I drove the Bugatti off the
security guard said no.
Yeah, she slapped you in the face.
Security guard.
Yeah,
it's like, why can't I have this car?
You and now he's got an arrest record. It, right?
Anyway,
no, people create their own reality through the stories that they tell every single day. So I don't believe things are set. Like, oh, it's this way because it is. I'm like, nope. You told yourself it was that way, so now you followed suit. You walked down that yellow brick road.
But I want to talk about your wine business, because you got in about a year ago, right? A little over a year ago? Two years ago?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Close. 2 years ago. So which is not a long time to be in a business, but you have grown a sizable team.
Yes.
You have a really thriving business, and you just got selected this year to be a keynote speaker at the national conference for the company you represent.
Yeah, it was our very first conference, and one of the areas I happen to excel in, which shouldn't surprise you, given I really just love and want to serve people, was customer service. So I taught 3 workshops throughout the day to around 600 different marketers about customer service. What do I do to retain my consumer base and then keep them feeling loved and appreciated? Like, well, first off, you actually have to love and appreciate them. So you could start with being authentic, and the rest of it will cascade from there. So
what a novelty.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that
makes total fucking sense.
Yeah, it certainly does, but you'd be surprised how many people miss that in their lives.
Bizarre. No, I wouldn't actually.
Right. So yeah, I got to do that. And that was, gosh, that was such a humbling and honoring experience to be chosen to do that. So yeah.
And I'm awesome. Saying that because you've accomplished a lot, and I'm sure you're going to continue to accomplish a great deal.
For sure.
And you know, this is, I mean, my God, freaking 6 kids, mm-hmm. homeschool, you know, I mean, you guys
Catholic,
you guys have acreage, you know, yep. Your husband's a pilot, so he's not around all the time.
Right.
You know, is there anything else you're doing that we don't know about? I mean, holy shit, you know, working out at 5:15 in the morning. Yeah. Are you writing a book?
I am writing a book.
Oh, I can't wait to read it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, you know.
I'm tired
just thinking about it.
I know. Oh my gosh, I got to take a nap.
Well, perhaps it's the fact that I'm an Enneagram 8. So the Enneagram?
What's an Enneagram?
For real?
What's an Enneagram?
I don't even know what an Enneagram is.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Okay, so
I know it's like an Audi. Something.
Okay. Like personality profiles.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, right. So it's probably the most in-depth one that's available right now. So it
So it's like probably a test you take or something?
Yeah, you can go online and there'll be a questionnaire, like how do you respond to different situations? And it will.
So it's probably a different take on like DISC or Myers-Briggs.
Right, okay. Right. But it is far, it really tells why you react the way that you do, and not so much like, you would be a great fireman because these are your particular skill sets. It dives into the why and the how. So why do you react the way that you do? At your healthiest, this is what you look like. At your least healthy, this is how someone, you know, with your paradigm would probably respond. And I'm like, that's freaking spot on for me. So
most of those are all based on the same attribute.
Oh,
yeah,
man,
I've never heard that one either. But
I'd love to know your numbers. It's like your digits, boys.
It's like an ASVAB.
I know
details.
I know with DISC, I'm a strong ID.
Well, as soon as you look up Enneagram 8, you're going to be like, oh, yep, that's her, 100%.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
It makes total sense.
Enneagram,
yeah.
N, with an E.
E, yeah, E-N-N.
Enneagram.
Is how it starts, Enneagram.
I'm glad I said something, because these two were just going to sit there and be like, oh, really? Enneagram 8.
No, I was thinking,
and they're like,
oh, I totally thought of all the people you guys would definitely have known what that was. Anyway, look it up, figure out what your number is, and then you can better understand why other people do what they do. So, you know, if you have family members, you're like, gosh, why do you act like that? You can look up their number and actually become a lot more sensitive, I guess, to how they respond to different situations. Oh, you're like, okay, this is how you are. This isn't just a behavior you're doing that's annoying. It's just who you are. So you can be far more, I don't want to use the word sensitive, but
aware.
Astute. Aware. Yeah, just be, have a lot more understanding of who they are.
Compassionate.
Well, that's one of the, that's one of the big benefits, because I'm actually certified to do DISC analysis. And so, you
certified
know,
smart ass.
Yeah. Go to hell. but it does a couple of things for you, you know, and I'm sure that the Enneagram is no different, because they're all like different flavors of the same behavioral analysis, but it helps you understand what your strengths are and what your areas of opportunity are, helps you understand how other people view you and how you view other people. And it does, it really helps you to like that. It, you know, for me being a really strong interpersonal dominant, the bean counters, you know, accounting, they drive me fucking crazy. But once I figured out like, oh, that's why they are the way they are, and they're really good at these things that I suck at. It's like, now, so when I need them, this is what they can do for me, you know, and they need me to make a decision because they can't make a decision, you know?
Sure.
And so those are, it's really, I, whatever model you use, I think it's really critical to understand yourself. And the more you learn about it, the more you start to figure out like who the people are around you. Like you'll spend some time with somebody and you're like, oh, I know what they are.
Oh, sure. And it helps to communicate with them more effectively too. So when I have folks that are interested in joining the team and, you know, partaking in the mission at large, then I can understand a bit better on how I need to communicate with them. So this person in particular, you know, I messaged him and he was kind of toying around and I was like, look, dude, shit or get off the pot. You're wasting my time. Make a choice one way or the other. I am not invested in your answer at all. I got a line of other people that want the opportunity that I have to give you. So,
he was not a millennial.
And he laughed and said, okay, I'm in. No, he's not. And, you know, most anyone else, I'm like, okay, you know, some people I have to approach a little bit more softly and then other people. But at the end of the day, I'm not personally invested in their decision either way. Yes, it benefits me in the end as long as they are successful. But I have to be a good leader for them to be successful. But and if I don't start off well with them, they won't end well. Then nothing ends well. So, yeah, it comes from a place of selfless action to make sure somebody else is successful based off what they have sought success for themselves. What does that look like for you?
The nice thing about you is you're not high pressure with them either. So anybody on your team.
That sounded like high pressure to me.
No, it's not.
Well, it was just like, make a choice. It's like, make a choice.
Quit taking up my time.
Yeah.
So to talk about, you know, how good do you need to feel for me to say, what do you want me to do? Say, oh, I can't be successful if I don't have you under me. Is that what you're waiting for? Is that what you, for yourself?
No, it's like, just make a choice, right or wrong. Make it and go with it.
Well, I actually think that's very respectful, because not only is it a waste of your time, but it's a waste of his time too, right?
For sure.
If you're not going to be serious about it. So make the decision. If you're in, here's what we do. If you're not, hey, move on.
But I know what I mean.
I got people lining up, bitch.
She's there to, she's there to support her team. Okay. So everybody who's under her, she is there to support him. Wholeheartedly, 100%, and will take all the time in the world that they need when they decide how much effort they want to put into the business.
Right. Like I say, I like to inspire people, but I am not here to motivate you. Motivation is an internal capacitator. So if you are going to be motivated, that's got to come from within. I will inspire you.
You have other people on your team who are just passive and they're like, I'm just doing this. And when I pick up a sale or whatever, then that's great.
And that's totally
fine.
And
you're fine with those
folks.
So you're not the person who's like, hey, by the way, I noticed your numbers are really low this month. What can I do to help you boost them up and do everything? You're not that type of person. Nope. And I think that pushes some people away from it.
Nope. The only time I message a teammate and say, hey, your numbers, is if they are $100 away from the next commission bracket, I'll be like, hey, in case you care, if you sell this much, it will boost you into this next compensation category. And then you will earn this much more on the sales you already have. So if it matters to you, make the sale. If it doesn't, enjoy your weekend. peace. I've got 80 other people I still need to contact. Exactly. I've got a lot of other people, you know, to support and mentor to their success.
On your team now?
Yes.
In 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
That's pretty good.
Six kids, homeschooling.
Yeah. I mean, CrossFit. I am not the fastest runner for sure in our company. There are other people that are, you know, have far, far great larger teams and stuff. But I would argue that my team is a lot more engaged and they feel supported and respected for their individual choices. And for that, I think it's a total win. And I know that God never set my path before me as something that I was going to run very quickly. I am a person of perseverance and grit and determination. So I knew from the beginning, all right, this is not going to happen fast and it's not going to be easy. And I'm going to crumble upon the floor and want to cry and quit more often times than I will feel like ringing that victory bell. But God knows me, I know me, and I know that I'm not. So, you know, I pick my sorry ass right back up off that floor, start wiping a counter and put an ear pod, you know, an ear pod in and start listening to some business podcasts and be like, all right, keep going.
Well, here's the thing. I will tell you, because of the circles that I run in and the fact that people have been made aware of Scout and Cellar, and it is a legitimate product. Like, I don't drink other wines anymore because they make me feel so bad.
Same.
So the only wines I drink are from Scout and Cellar. And it is a totally legitimate product. But because it's such a legitimate product in the circles that I run in, I know a lot of people that sell it. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, I don't think I've heard anybody represent the company as well as you have.
Oh, thank you.
And I think that comes directly from your dedication and your willingness to want to serve, because one of the things that comes through when I hear you talk about the company, the product, and the mission, because mm-hmm. you always talk about the mission.
That's right.
It's not just a product, it's a feeling, it's a lifestyle. It's a, you know, for that person that wants to drink wine but can't, mm-hmm. get your life back. Like that's a mission. That's a mission statement. When I hear you talk about it, I don't feel any bullshit. Like you absolutely love it. You feel it. It comes across. And I think that there's just so much power in somebody that believes in what they do and can articulate that. And I think you're going to be wildly successful. I think only scratching the surface.
Absolutely.
So, you know, kudos to you. And I'm not blowing smoke. I mean, I know a lot of people that sell it and you know, I've never had somebody smoke? Like get, no, not, dude.
Oh, you mean the wine? I'm sorry. I was thinking about marijuana up in Alaska. Sorry. I didn't know what you were talking about.
I mean, I don't even know how to control them.
Do you know if I did the etymology? What is it?
Enneagram, Darren. Enneagram. Come on now.
Enneagram. They would have to probably create a whole new number just for me.
At least with Darren.
They have wings too.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's wings to the Enneagram. So you have your main number and then you have your supporting numbers that go along with it too. So it's not like here's your one category of who you are.
Yeah.
They're supporting
a whole new thing.
At least if Darren smokes dope, you don't have to worry about him killing brain cells. You know, there's that.
There's that.
What?
I mean, it's like a 0.5. Is there a 0.5 category?
So to piggyback on what Jake said,
sure.
Whether it's this business, which was Scout and Cellar, or something else that you pursue for a business, I would agree with them. You will be wildly successful at any and all of it.
You're focused on serving, legit, like no bullshit. You want to change people's lives. You want to do better. You care enough to work your ass off. You don't take no for an answer. Like we were actually talking to Steve about this last week, right? It was, that can't be done? Mm.
Watch me do it.
Mm. That's a huge motivator.
Show up in a black flight suit.
What did he say in his seminars? Like you can't do that. Right. And he's looking for the person to say, "Hey, fuck you, man."
I can.
Like, oh, can. Hold on, we need to talk afterwards because that person's going to be successful. So I think you've got all the ingredients, and I'm really excited. What is your book going to be about? I want to read this.
So the book is going to be about my history in much greater detail and how I have saw God show up. Seen rather, there's some correct grammar going here.
Line creek. It does.
How
it's
I've
all
seen
of us.
God show up multiple times in very quiet and distinct ways, but how I've recognized that something greater was at work. And I really want people to read that and think not, oh gosh, that's so sad, you poor thing. I want them to read it and then say, all right, so why not me? I'm tired of the why me culture. I'm like, why me? Why is this happening? Why is like, shut it. Stop. Why not? Why not me? Mm-hmm. So I'm just not going to live with the brackets, you know, with putting me into a box.
I've never told my story on this podcast. I listened to yours and I think, geez, my life was nothing compared to yours, but I had,
there've been people who've had it far worse too.
Right. And I went through some shit.
I bet.
And you know, what's interesting is at the time it's the worst thing that could ever happen in life. It's just awful. It's misery. Mm-hmm. But I look back on it and I say, thank God.
Right.
Thank God I went through those things because they help shape, it's funny. I don't know if you have the same experience, but I will have things happen to me and I'll react in a way and I'll say to myself, I know why I did that. Because of these things that happened long ago, I would never want somebody else to feel that way. And that's why I just reacted. Because Kelly says, my wife says this all the time, like, I cannot believe you didn't get pissed off or that you didn't, you didn't go off on that person. It's like, I've been there. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a kinder way to achieve the same thing without being a complete asshole.
Well, and it's learning which mountain you want to die on too.
Right.
You know, like having the wisdom and the maturity to say, I'm going to take it to that. I'm going to take the fight here where it belongs. So, my husband, he's not a pussy by no stretch, but he is very passive. So he will not start a fight ever. And he will hardly ever engage in one. He will very quickly back down from, any kind of interaction. And I'm not so much. I will very much go.
Didn't expect that.
Go toe to toe, but it will have to have a very distinct purpose and there will have to be a reason for it. And it will have to be a hill that I care to die upon. And, those purposes, there's been a lot, no shortage of controversy in 2020. And I, haven't spoken out on hardly any of it right up until September. Well, September, happens to be a fertility awareness month and about abortion. And this is one topic that I feel very strongly about that I'll be teaching a lot about and sharing more about my story and how I came to be a complete pro-lifer despite having one of the circumstances that are considered acceptable by some groups of people and why. And there's a new movie coming out, if you guys haven't heard about that one, called Unpregnant. And it's about this young girl's road trip to get rid of her baby and about it's just mind blowing that, Hollywood's celebrating this. And so I'm here to share my story about why that could be the very best thing that ever happened to you.
So
that baby.
Unpregnant is a movie that celebrates abortion.
It does. So, okay, with all of that, I have not seen how it ends. I keep praying that the end of it is that she ends up keeping the baby. But more so, I have seen a man outside of a clinic crying on the ground, begging the woman not to go through with it. And that's his baby as well. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't get a say in it. What about that guy? So that's an area I'll speak out about. But most of them, those are not hills I care to die on.
Interesting. It's funny, so hearing you say that, it makes me think, and you're probably the same way. Like a lot of times when people do see me fight for something, they're shocked at the veracity in which I'm willing to fight because they constantly see me calm, cool, like, don't worry about it. There's a better way. But when it is worth it, it's like, watch the fuck out because shit is getting really real. And I think that you're probably the same way.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, when there's an issue that I think is worth it enough for me to lose followers, fine. Lose friends, okay. Doesn't matter to me. Tiny infant
people,
babies, those I'll fight for.
Don't mistake kindness for weakness.
Weakness, exactly.
Because if you do, that will be a mistake you never forget.
Mm-hmm. There's a lioness behind them bushes. Watch out.
And they're the ones who do all the hunting.
Yeah.
They do, indeed.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm really happy that you failed at your suicide attempts because you've built an amazing life. And I think, first of all, thank you for your strength and sharing your story. I think that this has benefited many, many, countless people. You probably have no idea. You'll probably never hear from the people that you've changed their lives today just by speaking out about this on the podcast. And I really appreciate that. I think that there's power in telling stories like this. I think there's power in people being vulnerable enough to talk about the tough things in life, the mistakes that we've made in the way that you did. And I think it's beautiful. And I want you to continue doing that. And I'm really excited to read your book because I, you know, we actually had all talked about this and in full transparency to our audience. We had all talked about this before the podcast. We're like, we're worried about this sounding too down if we really go through the shit that you've been through.
Right.
But I think that when we talk about stuff like this, it's really uplifting because look at you now.
Yeah.
I think if somebody were to have to meet you and just get to know on the surface your life, they'd say no way.
Oh, for sure.
No way. No way you went through all that shit. Yep. You got the, I mean, you got everything. You got life by the short and curlies.
Oh yeah. You know? They all think that until I say there's more. There's more like a transformer. Yeah. There's more than meets the eye. Right.
And we're going to do, now we have a whole another episode. Because I think we should have Adam on. And it's like, life with Tiffany. Let's talk about it on this episode. You'd be like, we're only drinking beer?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to...
Something
He's
tells me.
He's a whiskey
me.
Guy.
Well, you know what? We could do a little whiskey. Well,
I know a whiskey guy or two.
Yeah. I mean, I drink a whiskey every now and then. But anyways, I just wanted to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. First of all, for supporting the show and also coming on and sharing your story. I think that many people in our community that know you might be surprised at, you know.
Oh, they certainly will be. This is the first time I've spoken about my history in this depth publicly. There will be a lot of detail in my book. But with it being September and having the awareness that I'm hoping will be brought more to light. I thought I've been praying for a long time. When is the time I drop the bomb on people that there is a lot more going on? And I felt like, okay, well, this is it. This is your point. It's like, not to make myself equivalent to Jesus, but there was a moment, you know, in his young life where he was not yet ready to step forward and to receive the criticism and the judgment that he got. And then there was, you know, a very distinct where his mother was like, if it's not now, then when are you going to do that? And I thought, all right,
after
now
you
is
had
the time.
Your sixth child.
Right.
Because you would ask, and this is how Tiffany got on the, or wanted, asked to be on the show. She actually said, she talked to us and said, I'd like to be on the show instead of going to the website to do it. And
yes.
It's like, okay,
which is
well,
fine.
And it was a good purpose. So there was purpose behind it.
Sure.
And then it was, well, I can't do it now because I'm getting ready to pop with this last one. But after that, I would love to come
current
on the
one.
Show.
We don't know current that one. It's the last.
they are Catholic.
We are very pro-life and my husband's really cute.
And you have a lot of acreage.
That's right.
So we
you're gonna need a bigger house.
John and Jake said the same thing before you showed up. They're like, well, if the older ones are just about old enough now where they could take care of the young ones. So mm-hmm. So you're almost at
it's,
point
it's
of freedom.
It's getting easier at this
yeah,
point.
I'm growing, oh, yeah, I'm growing my own babysitters. No, they're fantastic. They really are. They are such a blessing and such a help. So it's not as crazy as folks like to think because they're awesome.
Your latest one.
Yes.
So what did you think of the Lion Creek beer? I got to know.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Well, listen, the next time you have it, you're going to have it in one of the best cups ever.
Yes.
Now you can say to everybody that you were on the show.
Oh, look, that's fantastic.
Yes.
That's the best thing of my week.
See, you have to be on the
spending
show.
Spending time with us.
No, of course not. No,
well, it always is.
To get the beer and so business cool. Yeti, you got to be on the show.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yes.
I don't own anything Yeti. That's way too fancy for my lifestyle.
You know what? Yeah. You've just graduated, okay?
Yeah. I'll wear it while I flaunt my Spanx.
Well, there you go. Boom. Can't say I've ever tried them on, but you know what? Never say never.
Sarah Blakely. Where does she live? Atlanta.
Yeah, she does.
Spanx. Mm.
We should have her on the show, you know, get her drunk, whatever, get her to tell all the secrets from the early days. Oh, we'll see. But anyways, really appreciate you coming on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having
been
me.
Been awesome. You really exceeded our expectations. And yeah, guys, Lion Creek Brewery, make sure you're supporting them.
Yep.
I mean, we're not out of the woods yet. You know, they are busy on the weekends, but they're not back to where they were pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. Make sure you...
Yeah. Music, food trucks on the weekend.
Just go down there and have
the official release of the 6-foot rule along with How the West Was Won.
Six Foot World, the official release is Sunday?
Saturday.
Sunday.
It was last Saturday when this gets released. The ninth. Oh, we've time traveled here.
Oh, we went ahead before.
So when you're listening to this,
See, it was
we've
last
got a flux
Saturday.
Capacitor. So we've gone back in time or forward. And I don't know what we've done actually, but we, the 6 foot rule is already out when you're listening to this.
Yep.
Are you lactating?
No, don't embarrass her that way.
So, oh, you can't embarrass me. Yes, I'm letting milk down right now.
Well,
so I'm kind of getting a little pressure here.
Guys, we got to go because this is not milk in business. This is beer. Yeah. I don't even know what to do with that. So
you guys started talking about liquids, and I was like, liquids. I wonder how the baby's doing. And then my body was like, here's some milk. I'm like, Jesus.
All right, folks, we out of here. See you next week.
See you.